Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week we sit down with the always funny Mark Hallworth, that's Mark with a C, to talk about Nick Nemiroff's The Pursuit of Comedy Has Ruined My Life. Stick around, and once again, thanks for tuning in to Comedy Album Book Club. It's your host, Matt, here. I just wanted to say you're in for a treat. We chat with one of my favorite humans in the comedy world, Mark Hallworth. Super awesome dude. Just a real funny guy. As he will be the first to tell you, has the energy of one of those used car lot inflatable wavy hand guys. It's pretty freaking infectious because I always have a smile when talking with them. Something else that's been putting a smile on my face is this week's sponsor, Magic Mind. They are a mental performance shot, so something to add to your daily routine, helps keep you motivated and productive. They are mushroom nootropics, adaptogen plus over 100% of your daily vitamin C and D per bottle. It's actually really wild and awesome. I put it in with my soda stream in the morning. So it's sort of like this berry-ish kind of just great tasting boost to my day. I've been doing it for four or five days now, and it's been a great pick me up. So I don't know if you know, caffeine doesn't really give you energy. It just basically blocks the receptors of tiredness in your brain, so you'll get a caffeine crash. And their formula helps support the body and its energy all day. So I've been having a really good time doing this. We have made sure, you know, this is a really great product. It's doctor validated, certified with scientific advisory board of doctors and medical researchers. There's been studies. And they also do good. For every... there's 5 cents donated for each bottle sold to mental health charities to help U.S. homeless communities, and it's 100% carbon neutral. And there's a 100% refund guarantee, no questions asked, for after 100 days of buying. So if you want to give it a try, we have a deal going on right now. You can go to www.magicmind.com/kinda, K-I-N-D-A. And if you use the code KINDA20 at the checkout, you will get 48% off your first subscription or 20% off a one-time purchase with the code. So check it out. It's helped keep me focused because we were into the weeds on a really amazing comedian. And I'm glad I was sort of on the ball for this because it's a really, really important discussion about a terrific performer. We discuss Toronto comedian Nick Nemiroff's album, The Pursuit of Comedy Has Ruined My Life. Nick was a Toronto-based comedian, but he's from Montreal. He worked all around the world. He appeared at the Winnipeg Comedy Festival, Halifax Comedy Festival. He was nominated for a Canadian Comedy Award and appeared on Conan, roast battles, all over the place. His album was Juno nominated. And he was just a funny dude who was loved by the community. I like I mentioned in the show, I only got the opportunity to see him perform once, but it was freaking comedy magic. So we're really lucky to have Mark's insights into Nick and his material. There's some jokes that are lost to the time, the sands of time. So if you have copies of them, please share them because we'd love to hear them. Anyways, thanks again for tuning into Comedy Album Book Club. And here we go. Nick Nemiroff's The Pursuit of Comedy Has Ruined My Life with Mark Hallworth.
That joke is extra funny because I'm actually really smart. I'm really smart. I'll prove it to you. I can either take out any two numbers you guys yell out and multiply them, or take any sentence and translate it perfectly into Chinese. You guys want to see the multiplication or the translation?
Translation.
Okay, cool. I'll do both. Somebody yell out any two numbers right now and I'll multiply them. Any?
Four.
No, hard ones. Big numbers.
64 and 82.
Okay, cool number. So for the listener at home, I pulled out my phone. Did I open the calculator app and actually do it? No. Now the translation. I know everything up to now has been a joke. I swear to God, this is real. Can somebody yell out a sentence and I'll translate it perfectly into Chinese? Any sentence? I swear. Okay.
My octopus is stuck in the car.
Okay, cool. I think I heard I want a party like it's 1999. I want a party like it's 1999. Okay, in Chinese that would be... Okay, I have it. I want to party like it's Year of the Rabbit.
I am joined today by the awesome and hilarious Mark Hallworth. That's Mark with a C. How have you been doing?
I'm doing okay. Keep it busy. There's a lot going on in the city, and I have some car access, so it's been fun to like sort of drive for the first time in like 15 years. Because I used
Excellent.
To drive when I
so
lived out in Alberta.
Yeah, being able to get gigs outside of the core, then and get out there, not have to worry about like finding somebody to drive you somewhere.
Yeah, I was always doing gigs out of town or whatever, but. I wasn't the guy driving ever. And so it's cool that you would do one of those a week or something maybe. And then if there was like two back to back and then you couldn't make it work and whatever, and you can't get to where they're picking you up on time. So it's cool to do one of those. And then the conflict now is you can't drink. Some of these gigs are terrible, but it's like open bar. You're like jackpot. But then if the gig sucks and then you go up first and bomb and then you have to stay sober the rest of the night, you're like, God damn it. Just get me out of here.
So you chose The Pursuit of Comedy Has Ruined My Life by Nick Nemiroff.
Yeah, because so, I assume everyone else is doing like kind of famous albums from the 50s and 60s or whatever. I assume people are doing like classic Steve Martin's Let's Get Small or whatever. Yeah, like George Carlin's Class Clown. But I thought, I don't think anyone on your podcast had ever done a local guy.
Yeah, I this is, it's funny because this is season is the first time we're getting some local, like Kelly Zumnickas had Brock and John's unrehearsed. So another, but that one's like an like a super deep cut because that's like a 1994 comedy album. This would be in like the wake of Kids in the Hall. Like these are the guys who took up the Rivoli residence after they hit it big. So it's great because like, you know, this is the second local comedian, you know, local talent. And I think it's nice, you know, like to get some different opinions and different types of stories.
Yeah, a guy that we all worked with, more connections, a guy that we loved.
Yeah. So when did you first meet Nick?
I was wondering about, I was trying to figure that out. I assume it would have been like 2015. Okay, you can edit this part out too. But you know how sometimes they have, I'm going to see on Facebook or something like see friendship or something. And then maybe it says like friends since, I did do some research. So not everything is going to be this slow. No worries. Yeah. But let's see friendship. Your friend since November 2014 is when we became Facebook friends.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. So I guess I would have met him when he moved from Montreal, I think. And he very quickly like ingratiated himself into the Toronto scene. People liked him already. I think like I did something with him at probably Jackie Pirico's show in Parkdale. And and he was around, I think at one point too, he was hosting something. I think one of the first times I ever interacted with him, he was hosting something at the Imperial Pub, which is crazy because a low energy guy like Nick is like the last person you would ever have hosting anything generally. But I think it was actually a pretty good show.
That's one of the things, like I only got to see him perform live once because like I sort of became more involved in the scene as he was sort of blowing up and getting on Conan and stuff like that. And it's just, it's low energy, but it's a charming low energy.
Yeah.
You know, like it, really it charges the crowd. Yeah, like, so it's kind of wild, which when we get into the album, we you know, it's evident there.
Yeah, he really pulls
it
in.
So yeah, I mean he did the roast battle on CTV, he did Conan.
He was like one of our first buddies to do Conan, right? Like DJ Demers and Mark Little, I think, did it before him, I think. And Nathan McIntosh had done it before him. But yeah, it was kind of cool to have a guy in our community. It's a cool thing, too. It's what it says about Toronto comedy is that this guy does Conan. And then the next night he's like in some dinky basement working for free, like polishing up new jokes. It's cool to see that.
Yeah. And it's wild, though, because like he uses that same energy, but in different ways, like in the roast battle, when I was watching him do the roasts, it was kind of like a judo move, like a comedy judo move, because like roasts people come hard and fast, whereas he's just applying that same sort of like calm, you know, just measured pace. And it just really threw his opponents off there. And you get used to this sort of frantic energy. I mean, we both kind of have that, you know, like, you know, that like go energy when we get up on the stage and get into our patters. And it's like it's neat to see a different feel, a different way to get to that funny.
Yeah, he had jokes. I want to say like 2015, he had like a 4-minute bit at least about a pig roast. And he's misinterpreted what a pig roast is. And he thinks so he's written jokes about this pig. Now he's roasting this pig. I don't know if that's anywhere online that you can find that joke. But I remember when I was watching him on roast battles, he was using some lines from his pig roast bit to like rip apart his opponent.
the wonderful ability to repurpose a joke. it for the moment.
Blair had such a great, Blair Belford had a really sweet thing when he passed away. First of all, for anybody listening, we're talking about a guy who passed away in, I want to say like June of 2022, I think at the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire had a post about him that it, where it was a photo of him and he's like nice and smiling and stuff. But Claire's like, you know what's great about this picture is that it's taken during Roast Battles Canada. So it's actually like he's smiling, but he was just made fun of in this photo. 2 seconds before this photo was taken, he was made fun of mercilessly.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing too is like, you know, it was really felt by the community as well. Like he is very fondly remembered by the community and
yeah. Yeah.
When he got passed. A bad thing
to say about Nick. And from a lot of communities that he was a part of too, I think like people, cause yeah. he was working in Australia for a while and in Los Angeles and people posted things from all over the place. You're like, oh, this guy affected a lot.
Yeah. Like when I was talking to a person in LA, they were like, oh yeah, no, I know Nick.
I remember kind of Nick.
Like yeah. he's, yeah.
And you're in your head. You're like, oh yeah. When did Nick even go down? Apparently Mitch Hedberg had this happen too, where it's like, he had kind of a humility that, people were like, you didn't tell me you were in this movie. And he's like, no, yeah. Apparently Mitch Hedberg did that a lot. And Nick was that kind of energy yep. too. It's like, when the hell were you rocking it down there? And he's like, no, oh, yeah. right, I don't know.
Yeah.
Some year. But then he, yeah, I ran an open mic for years and I was looking through the numbers and he graciously hosted it 3 times and closed it out 3 times. He would be totally willing. I had a show called Drop and Give Me 20 where people do 20 minute sets. Just to stretch the legs.
Wow.
I remember I was like, would you want to do this? It was a bringer show. It's not even that good. Like you have to bring 2 audience members and he happily did it. And he will always like hit up mics with an act ready. You know what I mean? He never wasted time
mm-hmm.
and people appreciated it. And it was always just great too. It was just, he always had some really funny jokes. And my favorite, you were messaging me about like your favorite time working with him. If I could tell this story, in 2016, Greg Houston out in Ottawa got us out and I was hosting and Nick was headlining. And I think Nick was supposed to close close up the show with only like 20 minutes or something. But because Nick is so slow and milking everything, it literally took him 35 minutes to do 20 minutes worth of jokes. And he looked down at his watch. He was like, well, that's so unprofessional. I'm sorry. But the crowd ate it up. Every punchline had like yeah. 2 waves of laughs because he just kept milking things. It was crazy. It just kept going. Mm.
Yeah. And getting into the album, and that was the thing that I like off the top, out of the gate, like he really, he did a bit of an editing trick where it's like if the introduction starts with mm-hmm. and then it like cuts to him going like hi kind of thing.
Yeah.
So going, but yeah, like it's just a really, he starts with this really calm energy that is like, I find it's deceptive. It's just, it's like, you know, you get into these jokes where it's sort of like an absurdist vibe, but you never really know what to expect, like from one joke to the next, I find.
For sure. I wasn't at that recording, but did you ever go to the Ossington for comedy
yeah,
shows?
Yeah. I did a couple of open mics there that I went to.
A lot of people recorded their albums at the Ossington. It was such a great little spot for
yeah.
And for the community. I think Chris Locke has an album that's recorded down there too. And I think Sarah Hennessy too. But it was such a tight little spot and you can kind of hear apparently he was really, really nervous. It's 2 tapings, right? Apparently he was really nervous mm-hmm. for the first one. And another thing that blows my mind is that it's 50 minutes long. And he had never done 50 minutes consecutively prior to doing it.
Wow.
Well, the first night, it didn't, apparently, like, it had, like, a lull spot in the middle, which is, mm-hmm. I would imagine, super common for one-liner guys who are, like, low energy.
Yeah.
And my favorite bit on the whole thing, like, one of my favorite bits is the idea to get an audience member on stage and reading out his jokes. And that idea, he didn't have that idea. He had never practiced that before. The first time he had ever done that is on the album.
That is one of my favorite moments, too, because the person that they get up is good. I mean, they delivered it well. They delivered it in an earnest way that felt funny.
Yeah.
It broke up the energy. And that stumbling over Colonel.
Yeah, right.
It was just like a gift. That's just a gift.
Yeah, she can't say the word. But there's one of my favorite jokes is in that part where it's like, I grew up in a volcano. We had to play the game. The floor is carpet.
Floor is cold carpet. Yes. Yeah.
I had never heard him do that bit before. I never heard. There's a couple, because I've worked with him a bunch and saw him develop stuff, and I never heard that bit before. There's a couple that I had never heard that was such a treat to hear on this album. That editing trick is interesting too, of just having the host be like, go crazy for the main event. And then he's like, what's up, guys? We don't even hear his name.
Yeah. And I mean, what I thought was awesome too is there's that point when I want to hear the end of the Batman joke. I do. Yeah. But at the same time, that's it was a gift, because that was actually like he said, I'm getting more laughs for this than that joke. So I'm just abandoning it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
What's a bummer about that, though, is that that bit is so good and I haven't been able to find it anywhere. I've been asking people that knew him well. I don't know if there's any recorded version of that Batman joke because I've been sort of quoting it, but I'm kind of getting it wrong. There's so many parts to it. And holy crap, is it so fucking funny. I said there's one other guy I haven't reached out to that might have an idea of where to find it. Yeah. And now, to you, I forgot about the pig roast jokes, too. I wonder if there's I wonder if there's evidence of pig roast anywhere. Man, that joke is good. Yeah. That Batman thing. Do you know that bit, the Batman one?
No, I don't. No, I was like, oh, this is a fun build. Where is this going to go?
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, well.
Yeah. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forget it. I'm abandoning this. Yeah. In my album, there's a bottle too. There's somebody kicks a bottle and it screws up a thing at the beginning. I'm like, God damn it. I'm sure there's so many recordings like that. No, his bit about Batman, he just keeps going it's about the guy pitching Batman. And he's like, isn't it weird that he's not going to be flying around? He's like, actually, this guy doesn't fly. He's like, well, how does he get around? He drives a long car. And then there's so many bonuses in there where it's eventually it builds all these examples. Oh, okay, he's a bat, so he's got super hearing. No, he doesn't. Just kidding. And then eventually he's like, gonna level with you? He's a completely normal guy with no powers. And then the end of it, too, it's because he's trying to cheer up a barista. And then it's like,
yeah.
And then he goes back to the barista being like, so basically I finished this joke and she's still crying. Like she's been crying the entire time. He's been telling the joke. There's some line like that, man. I wish there was a version of it. I'm with you. I do like the fact that it gets like, he works with this interruption so like charmingly and stuff, but yeah. Man, I wish there was some version of it.
So listeners, if you are a friend or a fan of Nick and you have that, reach out to Mark because he needs to get this.
I gotta hear that.
And one of the things I really love too is you literally never know, like I said, what you're going to get. Like there's that man from Nantucket where I'm expecting like his dating a poet kind of thing. And it's like, and he just stops and is like,
yeah,
oh, she writes haiku. Like I did not expect that. I was just like completely thrown off balance of that. Or his like sort of the other, like it's just these wild swings from sort of like charmingly innocent to so dark you can't believe it went there, like the Hitler was a grammar Nazi.
Yeah.
But he also killed my grandpa.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my lord. Oh.
What's great about that one too is that he's actually like a really good actor in it too. You know what I mean? Because he has and his voice cracks. He's able to do that like every time he manipulates his voice cracks.
Yeah. He does that multiple times and it feels like real. Like he did it on Conan too.
Yeah.
Like he did that. It's like, you could feel in that case. And both, I think in the album, the audience were friends or colleagues. So they understood, but like in the Conan audience, they're just like, wait, is he really crying? Like what? Oh no. Kind of thing, which is just, it's a testament to his ability to play the crowd like an instrument in a lot of ways.
Doesn't he open on that joke on his Conan? I think that's his first joke.
It's his so first crazy. Joke, which is like so bold. So bold. And then, in Conan, he starts with that. Then he goes into this reading off of his hands.
And it's
just like multiple times kind of thing.
He had a bunch of different versions of that thing where he reads off his hands on Conan. Does he do the one where he's like, hey, it's good to be here, whatever, and then he does like crowd work through his hand? He's like, hey, look at this guy in the front row, nice tie, loser, ha ha ha.
He does. That's it. It's just like rapid fire kind of thing.
So no time to respond at all.
And he has this bit in there about, you know, I'm just one big misdirection. That's me, Pierre, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, and it's true. It's true. Like all of it, even when he's really deep into a bit, like the HR bug play, it's all misdirect from either a performative point or a writing point. And I love it's kind of a joy to watch or hear.
On the album, the HR one, I bet he takes a bow or something because there's like a pause and then there's a big laugh. And there's a couple of times that happens on the album with like visual jokes where he needs to pull out his phone or something like that. And as a guy listening, you wouldn't know. When I put together my album too, I was like, oh crap, there's a bunch of things that aren't. Like there, you have to kind of telegraph the visual joke you're making right now.
Yeah,
because
I did a Dimitri Martin album recently with Evan Klim, and Dimitri Martin actually had a fellow comedian come up and narrate his actions while doing the jokes, which is a very Dimitri Martin thing to do. Yeah. And I mean, it's done. You can't do that again, but it's like, that's the challenge because even the most innocuous of bits, often there's some kind of physical component that you lose when you're recording an album versus like a special. Sorry, go ahead.
I have a bunch of things on my album about looking goofy and cartoonish or whatever. And I do have to like explain all that because then it feeds into all these bits about like being happy. So it's like,
yes.
Oh, okay. I got to picture what this guy looks like before I can see him being happy in all these weird situations. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, apparently I was talking to somebody and Nick really did plan out this album quite a bit. Like he intended to close on what he closed on and open on what he intended it to have the flow that it had.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I find really impressive, too, because it has like there's all these really tight 1-2-3 minute jokes. They're quick.
Yeah.
They're funny. They're very punchy. Even like the one one of my favorites, like where he's like praising Canada and then the punchline, I mean, you know, he's just trying to get played on the CBC. And mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a joke for the comedians in the room in a way, because that is so true. That is so true.
Yeah.
But it felt crafted. It didn't feel like just kind of loosey goosey. It felt like a very thoughtful, constructed bit of comedy, which is nice.
Yeah. But that was also Nick, too. Like, Nick wasn't necessarily, like, a guy who was, like, trying to find his way through a set. And I don't think I ever heard Nick go, what else is new with me? Or what else do you guys want to talk about? Or something. Like, Nick had, like, an act.
Yeah.
Which, even in the open mic community, in my opinion. And so that was helpful. You know what I mean? Like, you weren't bored to hear him or whatever. You weren't like, oh, this guy's wasting my time.
Yeah. And it's funny too. Like most of the album is pretty clean. There's some dark stuff, but it's clean
mm-hmm.
almost all the way to the end. And then in the very end, he gets super dark and super dirty with like the porn star name joke, which is just like, again, it's like completely throwing you off, but you need that to set up the closer, which is the fetish joke.
Right.
Which was like,
which is also so vulgar.
Funny. So gross, so disgusting, but so funny at the same time. Like when you were
that's smart.
Oh, sorry, got you. Yeah.
Is that what you're about to go to when I, what were you about to ask there?
I was going to say, like, when you were planning out your album, like, did you sort of follow a similar path of how did you lay it out and construct it?
Yeah, whenever you kind of put together an act, you pay attention to how much introduction certain bits need, where it's like, I'm going way too cold into this. And you see it a lot where sometimes people are like, they're funny folks, but then they're working on this thing of, you know, 10 minutes about Auschwitz. Well, you can't just grab the mic and be like, hey, pretend you like me, because here comes a bunch of Auschwitz stuff. Like, you kind of have to brace them for that. I saw it happen once with a guy at Yucks in Niagara Falls, where a guy had some very endearing stuff for the first like 15 minutes of his act. And then got into all this like dark shit for the remaining, whatever, 35 minutes or however long he was supposed to do, or 25 minutes. But then there was like this big back and forth with the crowd or these hecklers or whatever. And basically he wins. He dealt with the hecklers. It took 15 minutes of his set, but he got these people to like him or whatever. He got these people to quiet down. And then he was like, all right, now I'm going to just start at 15 minutes in my set, as opposed to just starting from the beginning. And so basically in his head, he was like, pretend you already like me, because this is what I would start saying at 15 minutes. And it was way too dark for the crowd. he hadn't earned them at all in that respect. So I think about that. Yeah, I couldn't just go dirty. Another thing that is smart about sectioning off dirty jokes is from a marketability point of view. Yeah, that he's right. That fetish stuff can't be played on the CBC. So if that was all one track or something, you're kind of burning marketable material by putting dirty stuff in it. And then it's like, now this whole track can't be played. Damn it. But he segments it like that.
All the, Yeah, like all the way up to chest mate, which I just loved. That it was like this is there's jokes that are so dumb they're brilliant.
Yeah, that's
the thing. A lot of people are like, "Oh, I can write a dumb joke." No, you can't.
Yeah,
a dumb joke is very hard. That's you have to really be hard. Very, very smart to write a good dumb joke. And those are very smart, co-founded Harvard, chess mate. But yeah, like up until that, all of that, you know, it goes places, but it's not radio unfriendly. But those last three bits. No, it's exactly, like, okay, yeah. Sirius XM can just stop right here, right now.
Kind of, And I'm sure in his head, he was like, that's fine. As an act, it's great. When you watch the whole thing for an hour, 45 minutes, whatever, you're like, oh, what a great button to end this whole adventure we've had. And you're not going to follow all this vulgar stuff with like, so anyways, I was on the bus. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be the closer.
Yeah.
But segmenting it like that is when you're selling it as an album, it's a smart idea. It's another thing. It also just makes me miss the Ossington too, listening to the album. It obviously makes me miss Nick, but also that room in the community, and you could hear certain people laughing. You hear Natalie Norman a lot. I haven't seen Natalie in too long. I think you could even hear Connor Van Abbey. I don't know if Connor Van Abbey was at the recording. It wouldn't shock me if he was, but I know Connor pretty well. I see him pretty frequently, and I know his laugh. And there's a laugh that sounds a lot like his.
Now, thinking back to that time, like, how do you feel the community has changed? You know, in the last 4 years, really, like since everything went south, because I mean there's a lot of new spaces that are coming up and a lot of new faces and new folks, but you know, like places like the Ossington, places where there is all this like history and connection of the community that are gone now. How do you feel Toronto is growing and recapturing itself?
It's got something new down the pipe, you know what I mean? It'll be fine. Like a place, I'm not saying like, man alive, the Ossington, they're not going to make a place like that ever again, because in a way they're not, but in another way, they're going to make another place that we're going to say that about, you know what I mean? I'm sure the Ossington came in after some other venue shut down that people went, no, my God, you can't beat that. And then we had the Ossington and there was a lot of places. Ossington was specifically COVID, I think, that shut it down, right? And it stopped in the pandemic.
That one was.
But you could say the same thing about 120 Diner. You could say that there was a lot, you know, in Edmonton, there was this place, Empress, that was a huge part of the Edmonton community that's gone. But since that, since the Ossington, we have now all these other venues that are kind of flourishing from. I'm trying to think of spaces. I don't know. I never saw in Toronto. We have this place, The Real Jerk. I never really saw anybody do anything at The Real Jerk until whatever this year, which is exciting.
Our sidekick on Queen East. That's another
sidekick
one.
Sidekick didn't
where
exist until our good friend Brady Coyle was like, we could do a show in this place. And then, you know
and
what I mean?
It's like a comic book shop. Cafe, little stage space, you know, it's like it feels like a return to the alt world, like the genuine, not like alt comedy of like, oh, Patton Oswalt and Young Maria Bamford, but alt comedy, like alt music, in that it used to be alternative spaces. That was the origin of the name, and it feels like we're kind of getting back to that in a way.
Well, and I'm sure there's some other new dank back room. Like, what was cool about the Ossington was its tight spot. Like, you know, it's weird to compare Sidekick and the Ossington because they're completely different spaces, but they're both places that we can do jokes. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think now of where people are recording albums and want to be recording albums. I assume, like, did you ever go to like Winona? Or Tall Boys, even like one of these places. These are kind of small little places that were similar to the Ossington. I think they existed. Yeah, they certainly existed prior to the pandemic and survived the pandemic. Yeah. But
well, and where you recorded your album, you know, that
Nothing
was
Fancy.
nothing fancy. That was a fun space.
That's another spot that a bunch of people recorded albums at. That was kind of a low ceiling fun spot. There's nothing that comes to mind right away of that kind of little black box theater spot to record an album. If somebody came up to me today and was like, where should I record my album? I don't really have an answer off the top of my head just yet, but I'm sure something will come around. And what's cool about the community is that people keep trying and keep having shows grow.
Yeah.
And they're trying to do
it. It feels like there's more and more comedy albums getting recorded. Like now people realize, oh, I can do 20 minutes or they don't have to like have a full hour. The bar is so much lower as far as, not quality, but technology wise, it's so much easier to record an album than it was, even 10 years ago,
Getting 20 minutes is completely different than getting 45. So it's like, I can just fire this thing out and I'll be happy with it. I think Darren Springer was another guy whose album was recorded at the Ossington, and his is only like 20 minutes and it's so funny. Yeah. I bet you Darren was at this recording with Nick.
Yeah. Now, are there any other moments in the album that really stand out or shine for you that like you were just like really or feel special?
Well, it was cool to talk to. I was talking to Sam Burns, who is a good friend of Nick, about some of these like behind the scenes things of. It was cool to learn that audience member, bringing the audience member up, was an idea that night. That blows my mind. Wow. That is so crazy. And the other thing that he had never done. It's so bold. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that he had never done 50 minutes consecutively before that. He had been headlining. Yeah. He had been doing like 35s to 40s and stuff, but I don't think he had ever done like every joke he wanted to tell ever.
The thing about this album too is it could have been a special. Like I could like it just feels like this could have been on Netflix or HBO or something. It felt complete in a way that a lot of people's work doesn't now.
Well, that's a testament to Nick too. He just had packaged goods that were marketable. You know what I mean? He wasn't goofing around. Like I talk to people that record comedy albums, and it's interesting how many stories people have of like, yeah, I just did a couple of weekends at this club, and here's all the footage, and do edit it however you want. And it's like, that's crazy. That's so disorganized.
Yeah.
And the act is completely different one night to the next. It's like, what the hell do you want me to do with any of this? Nick,
I cannot imagine. Yeah, I can't imagine anybody serious about their craft just tossing it away like that.
Sure, right? And they're not, but it's not bad. You know what I mean? There's people are laughing, but it's like when you're putting in my opinion, when you're putting together an album, this is like a marketable chunk of something. It's a product, right? It's not like a loose.
Yeah.
And don't you want it to be like beginning to end, let's think about the flow of it, the logic of it, or whatever. I don't know. Not to toot my own horn, but one compliment I got a bunch was that people were like, man, it really flowed on my album. It really flows from one thing to the next. And I would say the same about Nick's.
Mm-hmm.
Like so much.
It did. I was at one of the recordings and it was just like, it was like the perfect combination and assemblage of your bits in a way that it felt like yours was awesome. I was not at Nick's, unfortunately, but
one thing I will say about one-liner guys or whatever, not to say that Nick even really is a one-liner guy, but I guess he has shorter jokes and low energy and stuff, is that one thing that I have sort of learned watching other people and the structures they have it is when you talk about dirty stuff. George Burgess told me that there's like a flow to it of like, having like two one-liners that are clean or whatever, and then one vulgar one. And then it's literally like, I think if you listen to George's 20 minutes, it is like A-A-B, A-A-B. I think there is like a structure to it. I can't imagine. I don't know if Nick had that down to the wire kind of structure, but maybe. It certainly sounds like he's having fun.
And at least in the chunks, like it may not be like the individual jokes, but like the chunks are definitely staggered for like a slightly different feel. Like there's a progression there when listening to it.
Yeah, it does sound organized.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So if people wanted to find you online, wanted to find your album, where could they go?
Me? You could follow me on Instagram. You can find me on Instagram at Hallworth Mark. And Mark. Facebook too, even. I'm a millennial. You can find me on Facebook. and my album is called Happy Pappy, and you can find it all over the place. There's one
it is
under
well
your
worth
chair.
A listen. You get an album. You get an album.
Everybody look.
All right. Well,
but yeah. This was a treat, man. It was so great to hear Nick's voice again.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing us Nick's album, and thanks for listening, folks.
Bye.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here Comedy and ShowbizMonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Beauchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.